You're joining us for a deep dive today into something called price elasticity of supply. Now, that might sound like pure economics jargon, but stick with me.
Yeah.
Think of it as, well, understanding how quickly the folks making stuff from your morning coffee to the latest gadgets can actually react when the price of their goods changes. It's about their agility, you know?
Yeah.
Their responsiveness.
Exactly. And you might be surprised how relevant this actually is to you. Whether you've noticed, like, sudden price hikes on concert tickets, or wonder why some products are always in stock while others seem to vanish, price elasticity of supply, or PE, is at play.
Uh-huh.
We're going to dig into why this matters in the real world, looking at business decisions, what governments do, and even just the everyday items you buy. We've got these revision notes on PE here, and our mission really is to pull out the genuinely interesting and crucial bits.
Right.
So you come away with a solid understanding without feeling like you've just sat through a lecture.
So let's dive straight in. The basic way to think about PIE is with a simple formula. It's the percentage change in the amount of something producers are willing to sell divided by the percentage change in its price.
And that little calculation gives us a sense of how sensitive supply is to price shifts. If that number is greater than one, we say supply is elastic. Producers can, you know, crank up or dial down production pretty readily when prices move.
Okay.
If it's less than one, it's inelastic. They're not so quick on the uptake. And supply doesn't change much, even if prices do.
Right.
Then you have the extreme ends, perfectly inelastic, where the PEAT is zero, meaning supply stays exactly the same no matter what the price does.
Zero change.
And perfectly elastic, where the PEAT is infinite, suggesting producers will supply all you want at a specific price, but nothing below it.
Okay, these categories sound a bit abstract right now, but let's make them concrete. What are the actual factors that make the supply of something elastic or inelastic in the real world? What's behind those numbers?
Well, a key one is spare production capacity. Imagine a factory that's not running at full speed.
Mm-hmm.
If the price of what they're making goes up, they can likely fire up those extra machines and produce more relatively quickly. That extra capacity makes their supply more elastic.
Right.
Think about what happens during a recession. Often, businesses have underutilized resources and could boost output fairly easily if demand increased due to a price change.
Right. So having that extra gear, so to speak, makes you more responsive.
Right.
What about when everyone's already working flat out?
Exactly. If companies are operating at their absolute limit, maxed out on equipment and personnel, then boosting production becomes a real challenge. It might mean investing in new factories or hiring and training a whole new workforce, things that take significant time and investment.
Yeah, big hurdles.
In that situation, supply tends to be much more inelastic.
Got it. So headroom to expand equals more elastic supply. No headroom, less flexibility, more inelastic. What else plays a role?
The availability of stocks. Both the raw materials needed to make the product and the finished goods ready to be sold.
Okay.
If a company has a good stockpile of components and a decent inventory of finished items, they can react swiftly to an uptick in demand, especially if the price is attractive. That buffer makes their supply more elastic.
It's like having ingredients prepped for a dinner party. If more guests show up, you can just cook more.
Precisely.
Right.
But if those stockpiles are low, if they're running just in time on supplies or haven't built up much finished inventory,
yeah,
they'll struggle to meet a sudden jump in demand, even if the price is tempting.
Right.
That leads to inelastic supply.
Okay, so having that inventory on hand allows for quicker adjustments. What's another piece of this puzzle?
Factor mobility and the potential for substitution. This looks at how easily businesses can move their resources, things like machinery, labor, even land, to produce different things.
Ah.
If these factors are easily adaptable, meaning they can be switched from making one product to another without much fuss, then supply will be more elastic.
Yeah.
Your notes have a good example. A printing press that can print magazines one day and greeting cards the next. If the price of greeting cards spikes, the printer can easily shift production, leading to a more elastic supply of greeting cards.
Ah, so it's about how versatile your resources are. If you're locked into making just one specific thing, you're less able to pivot.
Exactly. Low factor mobility means firms are kind of stuck making what they're making, making supply more inelastic. Think of a highly specialized piece of equipment designed for a single, very specific task. It can't be easily repurposed.
That makes sense. Now, time feels like a big factor in a lot of economic situations. How does it influence PES?
You're spot on. The amount of time producers have to adjust their production levels is critical. We often differentiate between the short run and the long run.
Right.
In the short run, businesses typically face constraints on how much they can change their output. They might be limited by the size of their current factory or the number of employees they have. Because of these immediate limitations, supply tends to be more inelastic in the short run. You can't just build a new assembly line or train a bunch of new workers overnight.
Right, those things take time.
Absolutely. However, in the long run, firms have more leeway. They can invest in new technologies, expand their facilities, hire, and train more staff, essentially. They have greater flexibility to alter their scale of production.
Okay.
This means that supply tends to be more elastic in the long run. The notes use the example of agriculture again. In the short term, a farmer's harvest is largely determined by the current growing season.
Oh.
But over several seasons, they could switch to different crops or invest in more land, making their supply more responsive to sustained price changes.
So short-term constraints lead to stickiness, while long-term adjustments allow for greater responsiveness.
What about the goods themselves? Does what you're producing matter?
Definitely. The perishability of goods is a major consideration. Goods that spoil quickly, like fresh fruits, vegetables, or dairy products, tend to have a very low PES.
If the price drops suddenly, producers can't really hold on to large quantities, hoping for a rebound because they'll simply go to waste.
Yeah.
Conversely, if the price jumps up, they can't instantly produce a whole lot more because it takes time to grow more food or for livestock to mature.
Yeah.
You can't just conjure up ripe tomatoes on demand.
So you can't really hoard strawberries waiting for a price spike.
Precisely.
Yeah.
On the other hand, durable goods like furniture or electronics, which can be stored for longer periods, often have a higher PES.
Right.
If the price increases, producers can tap into their existing inventory to boost supply more readily.
That makes sense. You've got that stored buffer. What's the last key factor we should think about?
The length of the production process. Industries with short production cycles, like bottled water or basic clothing manufacturing, tend to have more elastic supply.
Quick turnaround.
Yeah, they can adjust their output relatively quickly in response to price changes because it doesn't take them long to produce more of their product. You can ramp up bottling water pretty quickly.
Whereas something like building a skyscraper takes years.
Exactly. Industries with long production cycles, like shipbuilding, aircraft manufacturing, or those big infrastructure projects, typically have inelastic supply. It takes a significant amount of time to complete these projects, so even if the price goes up substantially, they can't suddenly churn out a lot more in the short to medium term.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground on what influences PES, spare capacity, available stocks, factor mobility, the time frame, perishability, and the length of production. Now, your notes also illustrate this with supply curves. How do those help us visualize PES?
Right. The slope of the supply curve provides a visual representation of how elastic or inelastic supply is. An elastic supply curve, where PES is greater than 1, will have a flatter slope.
Flatter, okay.
This visually shows that a relatively small change in price leads to a significant change in the quantity supplied. Industries that can easily scale up production, like many types of manufacturing, often exhibit this flatter curve.
So a small price incentive leads to a big jump in production.
Precisely. On the other hand, an inelastic supply curve, where PE is less than 1, has a steeper slope.
Steeper.
This indicates that even a significant change in price doesn't result in a large change in the quantity supplied. Think back to agricultural products with fixed growing seasons. Their supply curve tends to be steeper, reflecting that relative lack of responsiveness to price changes in the short term.
Steep means less reaction to price changes. Flat means a bigger reaction. What about those perfectly elastic and inelastic scenarios?
Well, a perfectly inelastic supply curve where PS equals 0 is shown as a vertical line.
Straight up and down.
Exactly. This visually emphasizes that the quantity supplied remains constant no matter how high or low the price goes. Consider something like the number of seats in a very small exclusive theater. That number is fixed for a given performance, regardless of whether tickets are selling for $50 or $500.
Right. You can't magically add more seats just because demand skyrockets.
Exactly. And then there's perfectly elastic supply, where PS is infinite, represented by a horizontal supply curve.
Okay, flatline.
This means that producers are willing to supply an unlimited quantity at a specific price, but they won't supply anything at a price below that. This is more of a theoretical extreme, often used in economics to illustrate perfectly competitive markets.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine a scenario where many identical small vendors are selling the exact same simple product. If one tries to charge even slightly more than the prevailing market price, buyers will simply go to another vendor.
So a horizontal line, they'll supply as much as you want at that price point, but not a cent less. That's quite a contrast to the unmoving vertical line of perfectly inelastic supply. Now that we have a good grasp of what peat is and the factors that shape it, why is this actually important? Why should you, the listener, care about all these curves and categories?
Well, understanding peat has really significant practical implications. Let's start with businesses. For a business owner, knowing the PES of their product can be crucial for making decisions about production levels when they anticipate changes in demand.
Makes sense.
For example, if they know their supply is quite inelastic, they'll need to be very careful with inventory management and long-term production planning because they won't be able to quickly ramp up output if there's an unexpected surge in demand.
Yeah, they'd be caught short.
Right. This also directly impacts their pricing strategies. If you can't easily increase supply, you might have more leeway to raise prices when demand goes up.
Okay.
Think about the airline industry again. Because adding new planes and training pilots takes significant time, their supply is relatively inelastic in the short run. This is why you often see huge price spikes during peak travel seasons. They simply can't conjure up more seats quickly enough, and they know demand will likely remain high despite the price increase.
That sudden jump in flight prices during holidays makes total sense now through the lens of inelastic supply. What about governments? How does PES factor into their decisions?
Governments need to consider PES when they're implementing policies like taxes and subsidies. For instance, if a government imposes a tax on a good with highly inelastic supply, like, say, gasoline, the tax is more likely to result in higher prices for consumers at the pump than in a significant reduction in the amount of gasoline consumed. People still need to drive, right?
Yeah.
So they'll likely just pay the higher price.
So the burden falls on the consumer.
Mostly, yes. The government might get more tax revenue, but it might not significantly achieve a goal like reducing carbon emissions in the short term. On the other hand, if the supply of something is more elastic, a subsidy might be more effective in boosting production and lowering prices for consumers.
So the responsiveness of supply dictates who really bears the burden of a tax or who benefits most from a subsidy. That's a key insight. How does P play into the bigger picture of the economy? Things like inflation.
Well, if the overall supply of goods and services in an economy is relatively inelastic, then sudden increases in demand, perhaps driven by increased consumer spending, can easily lead to inflation.
Right, demand pulls prices up.
Because producers can't quickly increase their output to meet that higher demand, the limited supply pushes prices upwards. Conversely, if supply is generally more elastic, businesses can respond to increased demand by producing more, which helps to keep prices more stable and allows for economic growth without necessarily triggering significant inflation.
Okay.
Elastic supply acts as a kind of buffer against inflationary pressures.
So a more flexible supply side of the economy can contribute to price stability. That's an interesting connection. What about the labor market? You mentioned that briefly earlier.
Yes, the concept of P isn't limited to just physical goods. Skilled labor markets often exhibit relatively inelastic supply, especially in the short to medium term.
Like doctors or engineers?
Exactly. For example, becoming a surgeon or a software engineer requires years of specialized education and training. Even if there's a surge in demand and significantly higher salaries offered, the supply of qualified individuals can't increase overnight.
No, it takes years.
This inelasticity in supply is a major factor in why certain specialized skills often command high wages. It's not just about high demand. It's also about the difficulty and time it takes to increase the supply of qualified professionals.
Right.
On the other hand, the supply of less skilled labor might be more elastic because individuals can often move between different types of entry-level jobs more easily.
That really clarifies why certain professions have such consistent demand and high compensation. It's the bottleneck on the supply side.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground. What are the absolute must-remember takeaways about price elasticity of supply?
Okay, well, essentially, PE tells us how much the quantity supplied of something changes in response to a change in its price. The formula is key. Percentage change in quantity supplied divided by percentage change in price.
Got it.
Remember the categories. Elastic, greater than 1. Inelastic, less than 1. Perfectly inelastic, 0, like those fixed concert hall seats. And perfectly elastic, infinite, that theoretical horizontal supply curve.
Mm. And we've explored the 6 main factors influencing PES. Spare production capacity, availability of stocks, mobility of production factors, the time available for adjustment, the perishability of the goods themselves, and the length of the production process.
And we saw how those factors translate into the visual of supply curves flatter for those quick responders, the elastic supplies, and steeper for the slow to change inelastic supplies.
Exactly. And critically, we've highlighted why understanding PS is so important for businesses when making production and pricing decisions, for governments when designing affected economic policies like taxes and subsidies,
right,
and for understanding broader economic trends related to inflation and the dynamics of different markets, including labor.
So it's not just an abstract economic idea. It's a really practical tool for understanding how markets actually work and how different players react to price signals in those markets.
Precisely. It takes our understanding beyond simply knowing that supply and demand interact and helps us grasp the degree to which supply actually responds to those price shifts.
This has been a truly insightful deep dive. Now, for you, the listener, here's something to think about as you go about your day. Pick a specific product or industry, you know, well, maybe the market for electric vehicle batteries, or the supply of freshly brewed coffee at your local shop, or even the availability of tickets for a popular sporting event. Considering the factors we've discussed today, spare capacity, how much inventory they might keep, how specialized the production is, the time it takes to increase supply, and so on, would you expect the supply of that good or service to be relatively elastic or inelastic? And what do you think are the real-world consequences of that elasticity? Start paying attention to how supply reacts to price changes around you. You might be surprised at how often this concept of price elasticity of supply pops up in your everyday experiences. Thanks for diving deep with us.